The Inexplicable Matchbox by J. Harriet. Read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. This is a Homestead gift for spring of 2025. Summary. Sherlock is gifted a strange matchbox, one that glows brighter than a thousand suns. But what does it do? Where is it taking them? And why are there alternate versions of themselves living in their house? The atmosphere in 221B Baker Street is, for once, blessedly calm. John, rifling through bills on the mantel, setting aside those that need to be dealt with promptly, Sherlock perches upon his armchair, ducked over something gifted to him by a client as Rosie plays quietly at his feet with a toy car. All of them are still in their shoes and coats, Rosie wearing her backpack, just having returned from the nursery run. Though Sherlock has been fascinated by his gift the entire walk home, scarcely raising his eyes and certainly not engaging in conversation. Clearing his throat, John neatly folds a newspaper and sets it down on the busy coffee table, regarding the room as if he has only just arrived. "What have you got there?" he asks, a smile playing at his lips. Without turning around, both his daughter and his partner answer with their respective activities, and he chuckles, sliding over to the leather armchair. Sherlock lifts his elbow out of the way for John to lean on the arm, peering down at the small box contained in his large hands. "Is that a matchbox?" I was told it is quite a remarkable object. Something right up my street, according to Mrs. DeMarco." Sherlock holds it aloft, but it seems like a regular matchbox, scuffed by use on the striker side, the printed text fading.
"It looks old."
"It is. It still says Lucifer's on the front. See?" Sherlock flips it over to showcase the sun-bleached letters. "These matches were made by John Walker in 1827, who named them Lucifer's from the Latin derivative to mean bringer of light or light-bringing. They went out of fashion because they were known for popping sparks when lit."
"Well, really? How on earth did you know that?" John hums.
Sherlock shrugs and continues, "I was told not to open it lest I want to go on, and I quote, the journey of a lifetime."
"Sounds interesting," John hums, bringing one hand up to tousle the clipped curls on the nape of Sherlock's neck. "Have you opened it yet?"
"No, shall we?"
Sherlock's eyes stare intently at the box as he uses two fingers to slide the inner compartment out of the sleeve. Immediately, a startling golden glow emanates from within, momentarily blinding them. Rosie looks up at the sharp sound of her father gasping and releases her own breathy surprise, clambering over to straddle Sherlock's thighs, toy car held in a loose grasp.
"What is it?"
John asks, transfixed by the glow.
"Let's find out,"
Sherlock says, and he pushes his index finger into the sparkling abyss. It flashes brighter, white now, swallowing them into its clutches. John yells out, his hand flying out to grasp his daughter, but he cannot feel anything. Feels like he's floating when...
"What?"
Sherlock says, voice too loud in the quiet of the room.
"Daddy, where are we? What happened?"
Rosie asks, frowning. John pulls her from Sherlock's lap into his arms, his palm cupping the expanse of her skull.
"We're home?"
Footsteps leap up the stairs two at a time, and a man around John's height enters the room, his grin dimming. He fiddles with his leather jacket, scuffed Converse skidding to a halt.
Hi. Hello. Did you have a case for us?"
"Sorry," Sherlock blinks.
"You know where you are, right? 221B Baker Street?"
"Peculiar." Sherlock glances at John, who holds Rosie a little tighter.
Sure, I'm John Watson. Hello."
The man gives an awkward, curled finger wave.
"And you are?"
"John?" Sherlock turns to his John, who's been stunned into silent blinking.
"Yeah, it can get a bit weird, you know, matching the face to the voice."
When the man, this other John, receives no response, he spits out a laugh and fiddles with the back of his neck.
"You know, from the podcast? That's why you're here, right?" podcast, John?
Sherlock's eyes, like a kitten watching tennis, flit between the two men, eyebrows pleated neatly towards his nose.
Yes, still here.
Other John chuckles awkwardly.
No, Dr. Watson,
Sherlock says.
Yes, that's me,
Other John proclaims, raising his hand as if a schoolboy prying for the teacher's attention. Sherlock pokes John in the chest.
This is my partner, Dr. John Watson.
Other John giggles, reaching out to shake John's hand.
Oh, we have the same name. What a coinkadink.
From downstairs, there's a muffled thump as the door shuts, followed by a deep baritone voice calling,
John, what's the noise? I hear people. Up here! Look, mate, this chap has the same name as me.
Oh, good afternoon. The second man steps forward, an inch shorter than Sherlock, but just as skinny, purple bags prominent beneath his dark brown eyes. He doesn't offer out a hand, nor does Sherlock. The Johns, bewildered, realize the conversation will end abruptly and immediately, so in total synchronization say,
Oh, sorry. This is Sherlock Holmes.
The room falls silent, the Sherlocks falling into a battle of deductions. Their eyes flicker eerily similar to one another, scanning from head to toe, then to the Johns, then back to each other.
Fascinating. Other Sherlock says. You have the same name, too, Other John remarks. Are you related?
What year is this? Sherlock asks.
What? 2023. Oh, my God, are you from the future?
The grin creeping across Other John's face is rather uncanny, his eyes growing wide and twinkling. Sherlock frowns, glancing at his partner, but he can see no differences in his appearance.
No, you are. What?
Other John exclaims, his arms thrown into the air.
Wait. Where, or more, when are you from, mate?
It was October 22nd, 2018.
What day is it? Hang on. Let me just have a mooch. It is...
Other John looks at his phone.
Oh, it's October 22nd today. Wow, so you're from 5 years ago. That's crazy.
Other John breathes, his chest heaving from his excitement. The Sherlocks continue to stare at one another in silence, eyes narrowed. So Other John turns to the remaining parties.
I'm not sure I caught your name, little one.
You stole my daddy's name and Sherlock's. Who are you? Why are you in our house? And why does our house look different?
Asked the toddler, peering at him with a daring look to her bright blue eyes. Other John blinks at her, unable to tear his eyes away from the captivating, if slightly intimidating, stare, which is remarkable for a child no older than 3.
Well, actually, I'm not entirely sure.
Sorry, this is Rosie, my daughter.
Ah, daughter.
John twists her in his arms so she faces them, perched on his hip now. Another John waves at her, which she cheerfully reciprocates, all traces of her unease wiped away.
Right, well, this is an interesting set of circumstances. Shall we discuss this at the pub? The Sherlock I know from my, universe? Universe? Unless we are? From the same universe? Unless this is like a multiverse. Oh, like a, what's his name? Doctor Strange. I haven't read those comics in years.
Other John's face illuminates and he gasps, patting Other Sherlock's arm excitedly.
Maybe that's what this is. Doctor, like us. Like me and John. I mean, Dr. Watson, the other one. Other him. Which one of us is the other? Never mind. But Doctor Strange ends up traveling to a different universe. It makes sense.
John clears his throat.
Perhaps we could discuss the matter here. Rosie can't have a pint.
Oh, why not?
She whines.
I'll tell you when you're older, John murmurs, kissing her pigtailed hair.
Boys, I thought I had voices. Is everything...
Oh, hello there. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you come in. Are you here to make an appointment?
Not exactly, John says.
Other Sherlock turns around, body tilted sideways to address the whole room.
This is all case manager, Mrs. Hudson.
Rosie giggles, tugging at her father's cardigan.
Why is she not old?
Excuse me, the woman asks, offended. Other John stammers, raising his hands as if to ward off charging bulls.
Her name isn't really Mrs. Hudson, Sherlock. If I've told you once, I've told you a million times. This is
Mariana. Hi. The woman steps forward, providing a firm and strong handshake that John reciprocates with a polite smile.
You're pretty, Rosie sings softly.
As are you, sweetheart. She eyes the men warily. So what is happening? Everyone looks confused. Other John gasps, throwing the top half of his body forward.
Oh, you wouldn't believe it! We're from the future!
They are interrupted by thick, wet panting and four steps on the staircase when a small lilac bulldog toddles into the room.
Archie!
What? Daddy? Does he have a dog and not us?
Rosie asks, wiggling to be set down.
Because we have a Rosie and a Sherlock, and that's plenty of work, John says smoothly, bouncing her.
Hey! The aforementioned parties exclaim, their moos identical. Other John steps forward, gesturing at the dog as he sniffs at the newcomer's legs.
Would you, only if it's okay with your daddy, dad, of course, but you can play with him if you like.
Rosie leans back to provide her father with her best puppy eyes, all round sparkling pupils, and a tiny pouted bottom lip.
Oh, Daddy, can I? Please?
Yeah, of course, but be gentle. No pulling ears or tails. Yeah, he loves this toy.
Rosie slips from her dad's grip, landing softly on 2 feet, and follows Other John to a basket of toys. He pulls out a stuffed goose with a rope coming out of its beak, attached to a sparkly blue ball, and when he passes it to her, he squeezes the body.
He loves a squeaky noise. Oh, bloody hell, noisy toys, John groans. Bane of my existence,
Other Sherlock assents.
Now, tell me exactly what happened.
The adults congregate on the random seating arrangements. Similar to the original rooms, the den has a couch and 2 armchairs, which are dragged over for Other John and Other Sherlock to sit in, whilst their clients perch on the couch. Between them, adjacent to the coffee table and the front door, Rosie and Archie play on the floor, giggling and snuffling respectively. Mariana makes tea, but she has a clear interest in the conversation, trying to prepare the mugs with minimal noise so she can eavesdrop. Sherlock begins.
A client gifted me a Lucifer matchbox.
Client? Other Sherlock clarifies.
I'm a consulting detective. I see, as am I.
I gathered, Sherlock says, and then takes a breath.
I was told it was magical, that it would change my life, which I thought was a load of poppycock, but here we are. It glowed when I opened it, and John and Rosie were touching me at the same time. We were teleported. Were there any matches in the box?
Sherlock shakes his head, showing the closed box to him. No, it was empty. When I opened it, it emitted a very strong golden glow.
And the effect was immediate?
Other Sherlock asks. He takes the box, but doesn't open it.
I touched the inside. It went bright white, and then we were here. I was completely conscious for the entire process, but it was like I was blinded, and then the light settled, and we were sat in my, your chair.
John nods.
Yeah, same for me. I was awake. It only lasted a few seconds. And this is not a common thing in your universe? Magic does not exist?
Other Sherlock glances up, scanning them. Sherlock releases a humorless laugh.
I'd certainly never entertained the idea until now. What else could this be except sorcery?
Well, that's not possible, is it? It has to be like some kind of hallucinogen. Or you have amnesia. Or maybe you're just really confused. You could have just listened to the podcast and ended up here somehow, convinced you were us.
Once you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, no matter how improbable, must be the truth,
the Sherlocks say at the same time.
Sherlock says addendum. This podcast you keep mentioning.
Currently charting, mate. Other John boasts proudly with a smug little grin. Is this your modern equivalent of the drivel John puts in his blog?
It must be.
Do you record your cases as they progress? Sherlock inquires.
Other John ignores the insult.
Yeah, see, you have listened.
No, that is exactly what my John does, except his is a blog, not a podcast.
Oh, well, yes, I suppose blogs were all the rage back then. Wow, back then, that's a wild thought, isn't it? Because it was only 5 years ago, but, well, your daughter didn't even exist then 5 years ago. Now look at her, a whole grown child. Grown isn't the right word, is it, really?
You share the same affinity for chatting nonsense, I see, Sherlock remarks, cutting off the ramble. He yelps as a sharp pain radiates from the top of his foot, but he doesn't need to look to identify the source of the anger, for he can feel the scornful heat of a gaze on his face. He ducks his head, mumbling an apology.
So sorry.
It appears Archie is our world's version of your child, other Sherlock says, fingers drumming against his chin. Now this is interesting. My brother would love to sink his teeth into this.
As would mine.
Sherlock fishes his phone from his inner jacket pocket as Mariana returns to set down 4 mugs of tea, with milk and sugar provided, alongside a cup of apple juice.
For the little one.
She smiles at John, who thanks her profusely and reaches for a mug.
Don't!
Sherlock says sharply, his arm darting out to prevent John.
What? Don't be rude. Mariana made this for us.
John frowns with his bit-not-good face.
Don't consume anything from this universe, not even a drop or a crumb. We don't know what effect it might have on us.
John's eyes widen, and he abandons the mug.
Right, yeah, good idea. My apologies, Mariana.
No, it's fine. I don't want anything bad to happen to you.
She smiles, perching on other John's armchair.
Something bad's gonna happen to us?
Rosie whirls around, her little doe-eyed face devastated.
No, absolutely not, darling. Mariana just means a tummy ache.
John soothes with a placating smile.
Oh, I don't like tummy ache.
She frowns. Other John leans down toward her.
Neither do I, Rosie. Hey, I think Archie likes you.
She forgets her qualms and smiles, a big toothy grin similar to John's cheesy smiles when he's pleased about something. She pats Archie's head, who, panting, nudges into it, then flops onto his back to expose his belly.
Daddy, look, he's got a willy.
Penis, Rosie. Don't be so pedestrian. Sherlock corrects without even looking at her.
Well, how do you think we should solve this?
Mariana asks, steering the conversation as far from canine genitalia as she can. Sherlock kisses his teeth, pocketing the matchbox inside his jacket, hidden beneath his greatcoat.
I'm going to call my brother. The current number should work unless he's changed it in the last hour.
Right, yeah, good idea. You don't have the same brother, do you?
Other John chuckles. Sherlock squints his eyes at this multiversal counterpart.
Say your brother's name on the count of 3. 1, 2, 3...
Mycroft,
they say simultaneously.
Older? Sherlock asks.
By 7 years.
Other Sherlock adds, parents, alive.
Sherlock turns to other John.
John, your parents?
Yeah, he says.
No dad in the picture,
John confirms.
This is getting freaky now,
Mariana says with a histrionic shiver.
Sherlock called you Mrs. Hudson?
John looks at her and she sighs, pretending to be put upon.
I'm a landlady.
The men share a look.
From the company Hudson's.
Sherlock, your brother?
Other Sherlock reminds pressingly.
Oh, yes.
Sherlock unlocks his phone and dials, but rather than the typical ringing noise, it makes an odd, distorted sound and disconnects.
No signal. Try mine.
Other Sherlock holds his phone out. Sherlock types in the number and puts it on speakerphone.
The number you have called is currently unavailable.
Bugger!
The Sherlocks curse, their deep voices blending together,
RP plosives crisp.
Wait, what am I thinking? I shall be recording all of this. Let me get my mic.
Other John darts from his chair, a grin near splitting his face.
Lord have mercy.
Other Sherlock mutters as his friend bounces off like a puppy. He returns with a small microphone attached to a box with several blinking lights and chats to it as if they aren't there, explaining the current situation and where they are now.
He does this a lot. I'd say you get used to it, but you don't.
Other John scoffs, poking his tongue out to make Rosie giggle.
Oh, we wouldn't have the business without it, knocky knickers.
So what now? I want to explore the city, see what differences there are. Perhaps there'll be some clues,
Sherlock answers.
Oh, lovely. I'll bring Archie. Come on, boy. Listeners love Archie, don't they? Oh, yes, they do. Shall we go for a walk? Lovely weather for you've been cooped up all day, haven't you? Yes, you have. Oh, I'm so mean, I know. Where's your league? Go get it, my clever boy.
John leans over to Sherlock, one eyebrow quirked.
Don't you ever tell me my blog is annoying again.
Right, yes.
Sherlock cringes as other John drops the microphone in the process of clipping on the dog's lead, picks it up, and then blows directly on the foam windscreen to dust it off. Rosie, come along.
I want to hold doggy's lead,
Rosie yells, going on tiptoe to make grabby hands at the handle.
Sure you can. He pulls a bit, though.
Other John grimaces, glancing at John for support. John crouches down, her backpack swapped to his shoulder. Tugging her coat back into place and zipping it up, he suggests gently,
Rosie, why don't we go to the park and you can walk him there?
That's a better idea,
Other John smiles. Regents?
Excellent,
Sherlock says, prancing to his feet. The three from the past are already prepared to leave, and Other John adjusts his brown leather jacket with cream teddy fleece around the collar. Other Sherlock wears a pair of brown but thick-soled trainers, slipping on a thin jacket and winding a pair of heavy ear defenders around his neck, sunglasses tucked into the collar of his t-shirt. Mariana agrees to stay back in case anything happens, and with that, the group take to the streets. It is busy, but then it always is on Baker Street. Shops and bakeries lining the road. Along the street, the shops bear the same purpose, closed shops and cafes unchanged, except for a few of the brand names displayed across the front. The park, too, is identical, so they walk along the pond's edge, Other John relinquishing Archie's lead to Rosie. The dog's head reaches her hip, but he seems to know she's much smaller, ergo weaker, for he does not pull, walking docile at her side, stumpy tail wagging. The Sherlocks walk on ahead, Sherlock with his arms clasped behind his back, but fingers flicking, bell staff flapping in the breeze, walking ramrod straight as he does when he is on high alert. Beside him, with a more sluggish gait, spine curved down slightly, Other Sherlock fiddles with the sunglasses and ear defenders.
Is he okay?
John asks as he watches Other Sherlock fiddle with his short hair. Other John wafts a hand.
Oh, yeah, he's fine. He's autistic. He doesn't really do well with noise and light.
Oh, and the headphones help? John asks, steering Rosie toward the outer edge of the pathway, away from the water.
Definitely. They're more ear defenders. They don't play music. Just dull everything. I've given him a whirl myself, actually. They're quite good.
Might try wrangling my Sherlock into a pair.
He becomes overwhelmed, but pretends he isn't,
John says fondly, a smile tugging at the corner of his mouth.
Is yours autistic, too? Other John's face contorts, and he backpedals. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to assume we're not, you know, but, I mean, if you are, that's great. Good on you, mate, that's, you know, be loud and proud. I mean, sorry, are you?
John chuckles.
Yes, just over a year now, which is crazy. As for diagnosis, he doesn't have one, but he's textbook, you know. We never really discussed it, but if he wanted one, we'd go tomorrow. I'd do anything for him.
That's sweet. So's your little girl. How old is she?
Other John watches her chatter mindlessly at Archie, who keeps glancing up at her as they toddle along,
not seeming to mind when she accidentally tugs the lead too hard. Nearly two.
Two! Other John gawks. I don't know much about babies, but she talks really well for a toddler, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah. After Mommy and Dada, she never shut up, John laughs.
Mama? Other John asks uneasily, wringing his hands.
Yeah, her mom. We were together, but she, died. Long story.
John smiles, but it is a sad, thin line, more of a grimace than anything jovial. Other John glances down at his microphone.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'll cut that bit out.
John smiles. Please. He bobs his head at the mic. So, podcast, huh?
I blew up on X because of it, yeah.
Other John preens under the attention, waggling his shoulders.
X? Oh, that's what Twitter's called now. Elon Musk renamed it.
The Tesla guy.
Sherlock screeches to a halt and whips around, storming up to them so close his breath fans their faces.
No, do not discuss current events. Nothing historical, nothing beyond our year.
What? Why not? John splutters.
Don't make me repeat myself. It's tedious. We have no idea the effect it could have should we take knowledge of the future back to our own timeline.
Surely you're curious, John asks.
Of course I'm curious, John. Don't be stupid. But even I'm not willing to risk our chances of getting home on knowing which social medias are popular or who runs the country.
No, no, that's fair. Other John raises placating hands. I'll zip it.
Carry on about your podcast. That seems like safe territory, John assents.
Sherlock returns to his previous position, embroiled in a rather hushed but informative conversation with other Sherlock.
Oh, they're all the rage. I mean, I'm not sure if I can tell you that, what with all these rules and whatnot. But yeah, podcasts are great on X. I mean, Twitter. Can't keep my trap shut, can I?
John smirks amusedly.
So your podcast turned into a business? Well, I'd encourage clients. Mariana took the flat downstairs and turned one of the rooms into an office. She takes the clients, Sherlock solves the case, and I record it all. It's bloody brilliant.
Oh, nice. Bit like us, then. Except our Mariana is Mrs. Hudson, but she's just our landlady. God forbid you think she's our housekeeper. John laughs at the in-joke.
Sherlock has his website, I have my own blog, and we solve the cases together.
Oh, sometimes Scotland Yard asks us for help. Sherlock will consult for them. I blog about it, look after him, make sure he's eating and sleeping and all that faff. I'm also his doctor.
Wow, we really are similar. I feed and water my own too.
Other John giggles, giddy. Sherlock turns back to them, guiding Rosie away from the edge of the pond again. We're going to visit Mycroft. Perhaps he can help.
What about Rosie and Archie?
John points with his eyes. Sherlock dismisses him with a flap of his hand.
You go back to the flat. We'll catch up.
Oh, will you take the mic? Other John holds it out.
No.
No,
the Sherlocks say in unison. Sherlock strokes Rosie's flyaways from her forehead and kisses downy hair, whereas other Sherlock pats Archie on the head before they depart with a flourish.
They make quite the pair, huh?
Other John grins, far from deterred. John watches the pair leave with a faint smile.
They do, don't they?
He feels a tug on his trousers, finding his daughter craning her neck up at him.
Daddy, need a wee.
Right, let's get back. Quick, quick, quick,
he sings, taking her hand, but she whinges, making a futile attempt at pulling away.
I'm desperate,
John sighs.
Okay, he sings. Bushweed is.
Hooray!
Rosie cheers, blindly handing the lead over to other John so her dad can pull down her leggings and hold her aloft over a bush, his back turned to the path to provide a hint of privacy. Archie joins them, cocking his leg, and she begins to giggle hysterically.
Archie do bushweed too.
Delightful.
John mutters, smiling pleasantly as a young couple pass them, with clear confusion written on their faces. Other John switches off his microphone. I imagine my brother will be of minimal help, but we should exhaust all avenues before we take to the police. Other Sherlock mutters as they approach the tall, daunting building. Agreed. Those imbeciles at the yard hardly know their hands from their feet, at any rate. Have you got the matchbox with you? Sherlock taps his jacket. In my pocket, but I shall not open it again until we are certain of its properties. Good call. He's through here. The Diogenes Club is mostly identical, with a few technological advances. Mycroft's office is stifled, but instead of chrome walls, there are wood panels, more modern, if just as dark. Behind his desk is a portrait of King Charles III, though Sherlock does not notice the difference, for he has never paid attention to royalty, despite his infrequent colloquies with the royal family. There sits a man, with as sharp features as the Sherlock's, though like his brother he has a wheatish tone, a paler almond to his brother's chestnut. He bears a hawkish nose and largely hooded eyes, but he is no less scrutinizing, deducing quickly the unannounced visitor with contempt. "Who have you brought now, Sherlock?" he asks, plosives just as tight on the tongue as theirs. "You're going to like this one, Brother Mycroft. Meet Sherlock Holmes." "Is this a practical joke?" Mycroft sneers. "I'm from 2018. Trust me, I don't want to be here any more than you," Sherlock replies. He opens his phone calendar and shows the current year, and as told, it is set to 2018. "Let me get this straight." Mycroft stands up, and he's tall, taller than Sherlock's sibling, at least 6'3", but with the same stiffly refined gait. "You're from the past." "Somehow, I need help getting home," Sherlock replies, trying not to sound as desperate as he feels, but the edge of his voice is noticed all the same. "Did you travel with anyone else?"
"My partner and our daughter."
"Oh, so it is possible then, Sherlock." Other Mycroft glances at his brother with dark chocolate eyes, who scowls. The man leans against the front of his desk, crossing one ankle over the other, the light reflecting off his slicked back hair. He's thinning on the top, hairline a largely sweeping M shape, except his hair is jet black and curled at the ends, combed to the back of his head, unlike Mycroft's dyed auburn island of sparse straight hair. Sherlock sighs.
"Can you help? You've come to tell me you are evidence of time travel, perhaps multidimensional travel?"
Other Mycroft laughs humorlessly.
"No, that's obvious. I'm here for you to provide assistance."
Other Mycroft makes an odd noise at the back of his throat.
"Ugh. And in what manner might you suggest I do that?" "Surely you have records of this happening before. An experiment gone awry, a scientist gone AWOL. I'm sure Baskerville has made plenty of advancements in the coming years. How do you know about that?"
Other Mycroft leans in closer, but Sherlock doesn't even flinch.
"Baskerville?" Other Sherlock frowns.
Sherlock sighs, ignoring his counterpart, and, apropos of nothing, asks, "Can you get me home?"
"I don't know what you're asking me to do," Other Mycroft exclaims. "I can't very well pass you on a handbook of time travel. Such a thing does not exist." "Refer me to Baskerville, then," Sherlock huffs, features swirling dark with frustration. "Absolutely not."
Other Mycroft protests with a violent shake of his head.
"Why?"
Despite his best efforts, he cannot contain the whinge in his voice.
"You really think they'll just let you take yourself in your time-traveling device on your merry way without a single experiment?"
Other Mycroft challenges. Sherlock scoffs.
"You could authorize them not to." "That would require a court case, and the more publicity this receives..."
Fair point. "So what shall I do?" Sherlock concedes, deflating.
"I'm afraid I am of no help to you boys. Also, I shan't do legwork."
Like brother," Sherlock sneers. "Fine, come along, Sherlock. I'll have to figure this out ourselves." Other Mycroft bobs his head.
"It was a pleasure meeting you, Sherlock, and good luck."
Laters! Sherlock bounds from the room, the door thumping shut behind him. Other Mycroft stares agog.
Whatever have you gotten yourself into now, brother mine?
I haven't the foggiest, but he is quite mercurial, other Sherlock says, face stony, but eyes alight with that common excitement of a new puzzle.
Veritably. Protect yourself.
Other Sherlock dips his head, traipsing over to the door.
I shall. Afternoon.
Afternoon. Other Mycroft sits back down again, though he stares after his brother and his strange white clone long after they are gone.
So what now? Other Sherlock asks as I step back into the flat.
We might have to involve the Met. I don't want to, but if your brother cannot help us, I fear we may not have an alternative solution,
Sherlock replies as they take the stairs. There's laughter upstairs, the low hum of John's voice, the shrill giggle of Rosie playing, and Sherlock feels the knot in his chest unwind just a little bit. They enter the living room, finding the two Johns on the couch, Mariana with Rosie perched on her lap in an armchair, and another woman lingering between them. She's tall, around 5'10", wearing sensible shoes, a suit with a decorated white blouse underneath the blazer. Her hair is tied back into a neat ponytail, though she has curtain bangs that frame her rounded face, wearing minimal but accentuating makeup. Sherlock glances at John, who smiles, a smugness to his expression. Other Sherlock removes his ear defenders and slots them onto a headphone stand on a side table close to the door, his sunglasses perched where one might place their phone.
What are you doing here?
Hello, Sherlock. Dr. Watson called me. Said you had a good one. The woman beams.
Who is this? Sherlock asks.
Police Commissioner Gwendolyn Lestrade. Nice to meet you. She shakes his hand, and stunned, Sherlock reciprocates on autopilot, though he keeps his eyes on John, who does not conceal his wicked grin.
You shouldn't be here. We need to keep the amount of people that know at a minimum, Sherlock blurts.
John snorts.
And I just heard you say we might have to involve the Met, so there we are. Sit down, Sherlocks.
I like that. Double trouble.
Other John chuckles, shifting along so the men can join them. Lestrade takes a seat in the vacant armchair, cooing at Rosie as she crosses one leg over the other.
I'm here to help, so tell me exactly what happened, she says, her body language open and invested.
Sherlock, convinced by John's trust in her, recounts his version of the tale, which matches perfectly with John's account. She doesn't write any notes down, listening intently, taking the matter as seriously as any other, as if they are not discussing time travel and multiversal possibilities. After he's done, she nods, kissing her teeth.
Who was it who gave you the matchbox?
Angela DeMarco, one of my clients.
As a gift or as a case?
As a gift.
Do you have any other identifying information?
Her address and date of birth, Sherlock amends. Where I'm from, anyway.
It's better than nothing, Lestrade smiles. I'll check the system. Fingers crossed we get a match.
She pulls out a tablet from her satchel, tapping away at the screen, and Sherlock, frowning, asks,
You have access to the entire database here?
Oh, yes, it's much more convenient. We can see recent medical records, too. No more waiting around for a million different departments to line up correspondence.
Is that not a breach of security?
It's encrypted, with several passwords required to get in. Only DIs and above have the passwords. Thus it requires face ID, she says as she searches. Spell the surname out for me.
As Sherlock speaks, Rosie wriggles from Mariana's lap to retrieve her backpack from the floor. She rummages around inside to find another toy car, fishing one from her pocket so she can race them. Her humming serves as background noise, as Lestrade cheers softly, turning the tablet around.
We have a match.
Excellent. Let's go.
He jumps up from the couch with a little too much vim, nervous energy needing to be expelled, but with few output opportunities.
Sherlock Rosie's due a nap soon, so we'll stay here. That's all right with you?
John glances at the owners of the flat.
Of course! Take my bed if she needs a proper place to sleep. You look like you could do with a kip yourself.
Other John chuckles.
Don't I always?
John laughs sardonically.
All right, thanks.
Sherlock moves to leave again, touchy, his limbs struggling to contain themselves, and his middle and forefingers begin to rub repeatedly against his thumb. John slides out from the couch and walks around the coffee table, taking them towards the kitchen for some privacy, as Lestrade types in a number on her phone and dials. In the quieter room, John takes Sherlock's hands in his, not caring if anyone watches, thumb stroking over knobbly knuckles.
You okay?
I just want to go home.
Me too. Soon. You'll solve it. If you don't, well, there's two of you now. Double the smarts.
John smiles and, oh, he is the sun, the moon, the bearer of light in Sherlock's life. And he releases a heavy breath he didn't know he was holding. John leans up, kisses his face all over, pulling Sherlock down gently by the neck to press their foreheads together.
I love you. Love you too, and Rosie. I know. Go give her a hug and a kiss. She's probably confused.
As are we all,
Sherlock mumbles. He nuzzles his nose against John's, an act he adores, but always heats his cheeks. Then he straightens up, and the mask falls over his face. The game is on. Lestrade thanks the caller and hangs up.
Good news! DeMarco confirms the existence of the matchbox. She's willing to see us now.
We have no time to lose. See you later.
Sherlock scoops Rosie up, smiling at her screeching giggles, and blows a raspberry on her exposed tummy. He then rights her, ensuring she receives a proper cuddle and several kisses, as he whispers how much he loves her into the shell of her ear. It is clear he's reluctant to let her go, but her wide yawns are telling that they would just overwhelm her, and a cranky, crying toddler is hardly conducive to puzzle-solving. He leaves with other Sherlock and other Lestrade in tow, for once accepting a ride in her police vehicle, if it means getting there faster. Jittery, Sherlock sits alone in the back seat, his leg jumping and body writhing against the seatbelt, hands fluttering between the nylon strap and his coat buttons. When they arrive, he shoots out of the car like a racing whippet, pacing the driveway as Gwendolyn knocks on one of the doors. It opens, revealing a short, portly woman who looks much older than Sherlock's client.
Angelo DeMarco, I'm Police Commissioner Lestrade.
Oh, do come in! Tea?
The woman shuffles, the adhesive gauze peeking out from under her cardigan, likely the reason Lestrade found her in the system, Sherlock thinks, his mind whirring itself into overdrive.
No thanks,
the Sherlock say at once.
You might want to sit down for this one, Lestrade smiles.
You mentioned the Lucifer box. I have an inclination as to what might be happening, but in your own words,
DeMarco says as she ushers them inside.
You understand it? Sherlock asks.
She tips her head.
Somewhat. I know what it can do and some of its limitations. Which one of you has traveled?
Me, he answers, as well as my partner and daughter.
I see. Have you opened the box at all since you arrived?
No.
Good, don't. Not until you're all together again. Why aren't they here?
My daughter's only little. She needs to sleep.
I understand. Please take a seat.
She gestures to an overstuffed couch and a love seat. She drops into a battered leather armchair, Lestrade taking the love seat so the Sherlocks can space themselves out on the couch. Neither remove their coats, though other Sherlock has not put on his ear defenders.
What year are you from?
2018.
And is this your world, but in the future?
No. This is Sherlock Holmes, and I am Sherlock Holmes.
Ah, you've come from another dimension, then.
Lestrade capes, looking between the men as if Sherlock has suddenly become some kind of alien.
It is one thing to discuss it as a potential, but to have it confirmed is rather astonishing.
This happens sometimes when wires get crossed.
You know how it functions? Sherlock questions, feeling the shape of the matchbox under the layers of coat and jacket, worriedly.
Not at all, my dear boy. Nobody knows. Just that sometimes you time travel and sometimes you dimension travel. It is fascinating that you did both, however, though I cannot confirm if this is a first.
DeMarco smacks her lips in interest. Other Sherlock scoots forward. Have you ever done this yourself?
I have, once when I was a small girl with my father.
If this is a different universe, a dimension, Sherlock corrects, then you must have a matchbox too.
Ah, see, but it's clever. The box never duplicates in one place. We lost ours many years ago. It was stolen alongside some other valuables. We never did catch the culprit.
I need to know how to get back. Sherlock's voice takes on a pleading twinge.
Yes. How long have you been here now? As accurately as you can, please.
2 hours, approaching three. Her face darkens.
Crap. Okay, we need to be quick then.
Sherlock feels a brick hit his stomach, dread curling inky tendrils around his veins.
Why?
Long-term exposure to another dimension causes what my family coined fusion. Your interactions with the other dimension tamper with proper space and time, so to counteract it, you will start to be wiped from both dimensions.
What do you mean? The ink turns to ice, spiking at his heart, and for a brief second, Sherlock thinks he might pass out, almost toppled by the instant and overpowering urge to get back to John and Rosie.
It starts with your memory. You'll start to forget things, basic facts about yourself, your friends and family. A bit like dementia, but rapid onset. The more you go outside or speak to people of the other dimension, the faster you start to fade. One of my ancestors reported a detachment with their body, as though they were becoming translucent. But nobody has ever found out what happens if you don't travel back to your own dimension in time. At least not in my family, in this dimension.
After only 2 hours, other Sherlock questions, bemused.
One must build up a tolerance to it,
DeMarco replies, but she doesn't trail her eyes away from Sherlock once.
Shit,
Lestrade says. Sherlock, how's your memory?
Fine so far.
What's your name?
Sherlock Holmes.
Where do you live? 221B Baker Street.
Who did you come with?
My partner John and our daughter Rosie.
What's the date?
September 30th, he says confidently.
Oh no, not even close, Lestrade whispers.
Other Sherlock's eyes go wide.
That was the day John and I moved in together.
The fusion is already beginning, Angela says, voice reedy.
Sherlock frowns, checking his phone, and finds he is out by nearly a month. He turns sharp eyes on DeMarco, sitting impossibly straighter.
Tell me how to get home, now, he growls, swallowing the panic that tries to seize his lungs hostage.
You must gather your partner and daughter. There should be something in this universe that is completely unique. All around you there will be similarities, but there's always one thing like no other. That is your ticket home. You need a DNA sample, or if it is an object, something connected to it. As many things as you can, the better. Open the box, wait until it starts to glow, then drop the item inside. You must speak your intentions with as much detail as possible. In your case, you want to go home, so give your full address and the exact date it was when you left, perhaps even the time, if you can remember. At the same time, you must all stick your fingers inside the box. It has to be at the same time.
Why?
It's magic. Magic doesn't make sense. Isn't that the point of it?
She shrugs. So I just tell it what I want and it'll do it? Sherlock squeezes his hands into fists, then unclenches them, devolving into his typical coping mechanism of using facts to calm himself before he spirals. Like a genie in a lamp, Lestrade adds, voice tinged with awe. DeMarco smiles. Exactly like that. You must all touch the box at the same time. Dip your fingers right inside and keep repeating your intentions. Can your daughter speak? Yes. Oh, thank God. She needs to say it, too. It is very important. Do you understand?
We didn't set an intention to arrive here,
Sherlock retorts, forehead crinkled with bemusement. The box chooses your destination. It's up to you to find your way back. I won't say I understand it, because I don't, but this box was passed down generations in my family until it was stolen, so we all did our fair bit of research on it.
Trial and error.
I assume every one of us came home, or else why would we all have a box? DeMarco narrows her eyes, shifting forward with her elbows on her knees. Though I do wonder why my counterpart gave you the box as a gift, if it was an heirloom.
I'm a man of science and solved her case. She wanted me to solve this one too, I think.
Riveting. DeMarco smacks her knees and sits up again. But I cannot interfere with your dimension. Now go quickly. You must hurry.
Thank you,
Sherlock says, leaping to his feet. The other Sherlock bows his head, but Lestrade shakes her hand and thanks her graciously for her time. They bundle into her car and she speeds off, anxiously checking the clock.
We need to figure out the difference, other Sherlock pipes up in the silence. I thought it might be Mariana, but you keep referring to her as Mrs. Hudson, so it can't be,
Sherlock replies, chewing on the side of his thumb.
Our brothers?
No.
Me?
Lestrade glances at him through the rearview mirror.
No, I know a Detective Inspector Greg Lestrade.
Something unique, she says breathily, but without knowing the man, she cannot provide an answer.
Sherlock gasps. Rosie! One thing like no other,
other Sherlock repeats.
You're right. Archie and Rosie are both much too different. She has to be the key. Lestrade, can you go any quicker?
Working on it. She floors it, blue lighting, and Sherlock tries not to be sick, thinking of his family. His knuckles tighten white on his coat.
Sherlock! Oh, God, thank God you're back. Something really weird is happening, and I'm a bit scared, actually, and I think I'm going to have a panic attack, and I can't really breathe properly, and...
Other John accosts them at the door, his hand planted and splayed across his own chest, skin wan and tacky with perspiration. Other Sherlock clasps Other John's arms to ground him, and when his muscles loosen, they hug it out for a few seconds, until Other John is no longer on the brink of hyperventilating.
John, it's all right. Are they becoming confused?
Yes, yes. They keep asking what's wrong with the furniture. John said he needed to go to see his mum, but he can't because she's not here. And I'm getting stressed out because he keeps trying to leave without Rosie, like he's forgotten her.
Deep breaths, John. We know what's happening. It's called fusion. I need you to sit down, okay?
Okay. Christ, God, is it hot in here?
He chuckles nervously as he wafts the front of his shirt, breathless, albeit compliant, as he collapses bonelessly into a seat. John turns to the ruckus and frowns as Mariana says,
Look, Sherlock is home.
John squints at them, eyes shifting foggily.
Which one of you is my Sherlock?
Christ.
Other Sherlock tugs Sherlock by the hand, kicking his armchair back into its original place. He pushes Sherlock into it, who falls languidly, like he's in a trance, then works with Lestrade and Mariana to puppet John onto his lap, with Rosie perched on top.
Sherlock, can you remember what you have to do?
Other Sherlock asks loudly, as though talking to a frightened child.
DNA, intentions,
he replies groggily. Like a switch is flipped, he's come back to awareness, shaking his head to rid it of the fog. He grasps Rosie by the shoulders.
I need you to be a very brave girl for me now. Can you do that?
Okay,
Rosie says cheerfully.
I need some of your hair to put in the box. Can I take some?
Yeah,
she chirps.
Oh, don't forget her bag. Mariana dives for it, dropping it onto John's thighs, who watches placidly, as if he isn't entirely aware of where he is.
Leave nothing behind, other Sherlock adds. Is there anything here that isn't ours?
Shit! Sorted! The car! The toy car!
Other John kicks it toward other Sherlock.
Use this, he says, thrusting it at Sherlock. Rosie, can I take your car? You might not get it back.
I want to go home. Home is wrong,
she whimpers.
Hurry, Sherlock, other Sherlock urges through gritted teeth. Right. John, Rosie, are you listening?
Need to drop her off at me mum's,
John says, trying to slip off Sherlock's lap, but an arm wound around his waist prevents him.
Listen to me. I'm going to open the matchbox. When it glows, we all have to touch it and say, I want to go home to 221B Baker Street on October 22nd, 2018. Can you do that?
Sherlock internally thanks his foresight to teach Rosie her full address in the event of an emergency, for she's confident in reciting it, but it is the date he worries about. She loves to parrot phrases, so he repeats the sentence over and over, having her and John say it back to him until they are all accurately reciting the phrase in unison, over and over.
Ready? Sherlock asks.
Ready.
Goodbye. It was nice meeting you. If you remember us, I'll remember you. I can put you on the podcast.
Other John chirps, though he has a manic sparkle to his eyes as panic skitters around the edge of his consciousness.
Farewell. Safe travels. It was nice talking to you. Mariana waves.
Yes, it was lovely and jubbly. All those social niceties. Now do it, Sherlock.
Other Sherlock cries. The box slips open, and Sherlock continues repeating the phrase, barely stopping for breath, so that John and Rosie will copy. His heart pounds as he snaps some of Rosie's pigtail, a sizable chunk of her hair that he shall mourn, and drops that inside the box, alongside her toy car, the moment the matchbox begins to glow. With his free hand, he gathers theirs, straightening their index fingers, and with one final breath, glancing up at the other parties in the room, he presses their fingers inside the box. It flashes white, burning his irises, but he doesn't dare close his eyes, saying the phrase over and over, heart in his throat, sweat dripping down his back, his grip on their fingers so tight his knuckles are bloodless. And then...
Sherlock? John? Rosie? Christ, is everyone okay?
John groans.
Daddy, home!
Oh, thank God. John throws his arm around Sherlock's neck and pulls Rosie in close, so her face is tucked between their bodies.
Is anyone hurt? I'm fine. Are you still confused?
Sherlock responds, voice muffled.
I don't think so. Rosie, are you okay?
Sherlock kisses her all over, only stopping when he's shoved aside so John can do the same. She whines, pushing them away by pressing her palms to their mouths, jumps off their laps to go back to her toys, as if nothing had happened.
I feel like I can say it now. What the fuck just happened?
John exclaims.
I don't know, but we're never doing that again.
Sherlock shoves the Lucifer matchbox shut and gently removes John from his lap, storming toward the kitchen. First he tapes the box shut on both ends, then he puts it in Tupperware, writes out a short letter containing the instructions necessary to get back home, dumps that inside the tub, tapes that shut, puts it in another box, and duct tapes the whole lot.
I'm buying a portable safe, and we're locking that away and burying it.
Agreed. I feel like we'd be cursed if we were to burn it.
My thoughts exactly.
Sherlock takes the monstrosity to his bedroom, ensuring Rosie isn't watching, before he drops to his knees, hacks up a floorboard panel from beneath his and John's bed, and shoves the box inside the cubby space. When the floorboard is slotted back into place, one would never tell anything was stored underneath, and Sherlock is reassured that for now, they are safe. He takes John into his arms, finding the anxiety bleeds out of him in his embrace, though the adrenaline from the day wanes, and he thinks he might crash.
John, his lovely John, predicts it from a mile away, sets him down on the couch before his coltish legs give out on him. Within minutes, he is enveloped in a weighted blanket, cup of tea warming his trembling fingers, though he is still in his coat and scarf. They have long since abandoned shame in showing emotion, in accepting sentimentality, which is why John says not a word and simply busies himself with bathing Rosie as Sherlock dials Mycroft's number.
Sherlock?
He, too, is less volatile now, finds comfort in those he loves.
Is something wrong?
I just wanted to hear your voice. Are you okay?
Fine, yes. Why? The frown can be heard in his voice, providing a flatness to his tone.
I'll tell you another day. I just needed to hear you say it. You're absolutely fine.
Sherlock feels pathetic, but he needs to know.
Yes, of course. You will tell me?
Mycroft presses, an odd emotion sticking to his voice.
Not today.
Sighing, he acquiesces.
All right.
Bye. Sherlock hangs up, cheeks aflame, but dials another number before he can allow his nerves to get the better of him.
Delia Lestrade speaking. Greg.
There's a noise, as if Greg is checking the caller ID.
Oh, hi, Sherlock. I don't have any cases for you, I'm afraid. Is everything adequate?
Yes. All good on my end.
How are you holding up the fort?
Fine, fine. And you're feeling well?
As sprightly as I can for a man my age. Is everything all right? Where's John?
Greg takes on the same concerned tone as Mycroft.
He's just bathing Rosie.
Okay.
Okay, bye. Greg interrupts him before he can hang up.
Sherlock, you'd tell me if something was wrong, wouldn't you? After all we've been through.
Yes, I'm all right, I promise.
And you're all right, so everything is fine.
Sherlock takes a shaky breath, lowering his head closer to his knees as he goes lightheaded.
All right, then. Speak to you soon, mate. Have a good one. Send my love to John and Roro.
Of course. Good night.
Sherlock drops his phone as the line cuts out, and finally he can relax. As if on cue, he hears dawdling footsteps on the stairs, three light knocks, and the classic hoo-hoo of his landlady.
Mrs. Hudson. Hello, my dear. Oh, you look a little peaky.
He doesn't look up, but he can hear her frown, the way it curls her words.
Adrenaline crash is all,
he says, sitting back up. The world stops spinning, and he feels more in control of his own faculties. She waves a hand fondly.
Oh, you boys and your running about. Where's John?
Bathing Rosie.
Ah, well, tell him I managed to find that Coleman sauce sachet he was looking for.
Will do, he snips, but it lacks the usual heat. She stares at him, expression pinched.
You're sure you're okay?
Just fine.
She tuts, moving to his side to feel his temperature. He lets her, silent, and accepts the press of her lips to his forehead.
My good lads, you rest up now.
Sherlock hums, not trusting his voice not to crack, and he watches her leave with warbled vision, as if the room has been projected with caustic waves. When she's gone down the second set of stairs, he pads to the bathroom, stripping his clothes as he goes, until he's only in his underwear.
Look, Rosie, there he is.
Sherlock, without a word, climbs into the bath with Rosie, who squeals and makes room for him.
Get in, Sherlock demands.
Sensing the fragility of his partner, John does. Sherlock sits at the back, spine pressed to the curved edge of the tub, John snuggled into his chest, Rosie playing with a toy shark between their legs. He comes. One week later.
I still can't figure this thing out. Is it on now?
John taps the microphone, glancing at his phone. Hello?
Hello?
Lord have mercy. Sherlock sighs, pressing the side button. When the light is green, the microphone is on. Why did you buy a new one anyway?
The other one broke.
weirdly, right after the other ones left. He emphasizes by using his fingers as quotation marks. I still have the recordings for that one. What did you call it? The Inexplicable Matchbox. Sounds a bit sci-fi, don't you think? He fiddles some more with the settings as Sherlock, grumbling, returns back to his experiment. Right. Recording just... Hi! The Inexplicable Matchbox. You have got to be kidding me. I like it. Sounds like a sci-fi film, innit? Good grief, you know Mycroft will redact it all, Sherlock snorts. Probably, but I want to write it down anyway. Now shush, read your article. John nudges him fondly, returning to the clack of his laptop keyboard. Sherlock leans against him, humming, but does as he is told, shifting to make room for Rosie as she climbs up on the couch for a cuddle while she watches a movie. Things seem to have returned to normal. They're normal anyway. Business is booming in both dimensions, or whatever it is that they're living in. John types up his blog post. Another John edits the raw sound bites from their otherworldly adventure. Neither gets published. There are some things that shouldn't be shared. The end.